This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Pakistan, Afghanistan, part of America's disappointment these last decades. However, I've followed the story with Bill Rajo, the senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, who keeps the Long War Journal, and my colleague Hussein Haqqani, former ambassador to the United States from Pakistan, now at the Hudson Institute. And we begin with Pakistan right now. Bloomberg headline, very alarming. Imran Khan to resume early elections push after being shot. Pakistan court directs police to lodge report on Khan attack. Prime Minister Sharif rejects Khan's attack blame. What the prime minister is speaking of is the incident. Right now, there are pieces of it on the internet, on the video. The incident that is being investigated led Mr. Khan, a former prime minister who is campaigning for an early elections, to return to the premiership. Mr. Khan, according to Bloomberg, has described this shooting as an assassination attempt and blamed Prime Minister Shahbaz Sharif, Interior Minister Rana Sanu Allah, and the general in charge of the ISI. Mr. Ambassador, this is overwhelming amount of news, so we begin with your understanding of Khan. He appears to be healthy right now, or at least back on the campaign trail. Do you expect him to take up his previous rallies and the march on the Capitol moving forward? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Look, Imran Khan is nothing if not a showman. And so while it's unfortunate that there was a shooting incident in which one poor bystander got killed and some other people got injured, including Khan himself, but assassins don't shoot people in the foot. So if it was an assassination attempt, it was very poorly planned and even more poorly executed. Pakistan is the land of conspiracy theories. The circumstances of this unfortunate incident are leading to conspiracy theories on both sides. There are Khan supporters who, of course, support his version that, you know, this was a conspiracy to eliminate him. But there are others who point out too many inconsistencies in Khan's account, being injured in one foot but showing up in with both legs plastered. And then 2 days later, the plaster is off. That's not what happens to somebody who has had his bone shattered by a bullet. Secondly, he did not submit himself to a examination in a official hospital. He went to his own cancer hospital. Now, cancer has hospitals don't have ERs, and they certainly don't have medical legal officers to deal with a situation like this. So there are going to be conspiracy theories on both sides. He will carry on relentlessly because this is more about ensuring that a new army chief that has to be appointed by the 28th of November is somebody to Khan's liking. He knows that he can't force early elections even by marching in the streets. He just wants to keep the issue alive. He's like all the other populist leaders that have emerged in the last few years in the world. They're constant showmen, and so his show will remain on the road. Unfortunately, Pakistan's economy will continue to sort of be in jeopardy during this period. The flood affectees will not get the relief they need. And this will be a spectacle made for television in which the star will be Khan.
The assassination scenario, tragic, that I'm most familiar with before this in Pakistan is the assassination of Ms. Bhutto in 2007. And at the time, it was a rally, I believe, in the Rawalpindi, which is the headquarters. I'm remembering now 12 or 15 years, Mr. Ambassador. Forgive me if I make an error here. And the assassination was overwhelming. However, afterwards, there were voices raised to say this wasn't just the Pakistan Taliban. This was rogue elements within the military. And I believe there have been comments ever since calling into question who authored the Bhutto assassination. I only mention that incident because does this present circumstance resemble that, or is there a contrast with what we know now all these years later about Ms. Bhutto's death and what we know now about Mr. Khan's incident?
Well, first of all, we still don't know everything about Benazir Bhutto's death, but she had two major enemies, the various jihadi groups considered her an enemy. The Taliban, especially the Pakistani Taliban, had said that they will kill her because they didn't like the idea of a woman ruling a Muslim country. And they particularly opposed her secular and pro-Western public posture. And secondly, she had a long-running conflict with the Pakistani intelligence services and the military. Neither of those apply in Imran Khan's case. He has been pro-Taliban. The Taliban actually support him. He also has had a good relationship with the military until recently, when the military didn't support him in averting a vote of no confidence. And so the military's position is, we helped you come into office, but then you have to get things done on your own steam. And if you can't, don't blame us. And he says that the military becoming less involved in the day-to-day management of politics is wrong, because that basically means that they are allowing people that he calls looters and traitors, which is anybody who disagrees with Khan, that they are back in office. So he has a cult following. It's a very vociferous following, but he is not willing to play by either the constitution or by the military's dictates, which makes people wonder whether he is a latter-day Mussolini, sort of wanting to ride on a nationalist surge and yet run everything himself. And the military is not going to like that. They don't like that right now. So there's a huge difference between Benazir Bhutto and his circumstances. Second, when Benazir Bhutto was attacked on the day she arrived back in Pakistan in October 2007, several hundred people died around her because there was a bomb that went off. There was a suicide bomber. He was definitely a member of the Taliban. Then the second time again, there was a bomb attack and dozens of people were killed and she was killed. And the circumstances were very different. This time around, this was a lone gunman who says he was annoyed by Khan because Khan talks a big game about Islam, and yet he never stops for prayer when he's rallying, and his rallies include all these dancing men and women, and he was personally annoyed with that. Possible, but again, not part of some organized group. So all of that doesn't add up, and the difference remains. Now, is it because Khan has the support of some faction of the intelligence service and the military that is more pro-Taliban, more right-wing in religious terms than the Pakistani military, which is conservative but does not want to burn bridges with the United States, with the Arab countries that are all moving away from radical Islamism? Because that's what he's continuously saying. He's saying the army needs to intervene, but it needs to intervene on my behalf, rather than in a way that does not advantage me politically.
Thank you. Bill, I turn to you because of an incident, a publication recently revealing the Department of Homeland Security and how over these last years, the Trump administration and the Biden administration, it has been tasked with monitoring, surveilling, watching social media for dissent. In particular, the quote that got my attention was, among the topics which the DHS has prioritized to target include, quote, the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic, the efficacy of COVID-19 vaccines, racial justice, U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, and the nature of U.S. support to Ukraine. This is a report in The Intercept. Bill, U.S. withdrawal from Pakistan, to your understanding, because we have had conversations for much more than a decade about Afghanistan and the troubles there and the struggle with the Taliban, and also the commitment of the U.S. military through four administrations. Have you at Long War Journal ever sensed that you were being surveilled or monitored by the Department of Homeland Security because of your accurate publication of the Taliban's rise?
No, John, I haven't. But I do find this to be highly disturbing for multiple reasons. I mean, what does the U.S. withdraw from Afghanistan? What does possible disinformation about that have anything to do with Homeland Security? Because remember, this is what the Homeland Security Department is about. I would also argue the nature of U.S. support in Ukraine. Any foreign policy matter, the Department of Homeland Security has no right and no there should be no reason that it should be monitoring this type of criticism. And I would also argue, who has been the main purveyor of disinformation on U.S. policy and the execution of U.S. policy in Afghanistan? Because it isn't outlets like me or the New York Times or Fox News or pick your poison in the media. It's been the U.S. government. The U.S. government lied about the deal with the Taliban. Remember, Secretary Pompeo stood up there and told us that the Taliban would destroy al-Qaeda. That would never happen. That they lied about al-Qaeda's presence in Afghanistan. They time and time again, and these are things that me and a select few called out for well over a decade. And now they're going to say that they're going to be the judge, jury, and executor of disinformation and monitor individuals like me who are really just trying to get to the bottom of the truth. This is very disturbing on so many levels, John. We're approaching 1984 level of U.S. monitoring. I mean, why don't we just set up the Department of Information here and let's get at it?
Yes, the Ministry of Peace, Bill. Sure. What we have here is another way to talk about what you and Tom and your colleagues were doing that last year before the sharp tragedy of the withdrawal in August of 21, which was a map. You were keeping a map as the Taliban was rising. It was a visual recognition that the Taliban was winning. And as I recall, the State Department and CENTCOM, Trump administration and Biden administration, were denying that map each week. Do I remember correctly, Bill?
Yeah. So what was actually happening was, and I've heard this from individuals within the Department of Defense, is that basically we were being blackballed. We were being told to certain large print news organizations to not reference that map. So, you know, John, to think about your question initially, maybe it did happen. I don't know. However, what I do know is they tried to, and I noticed, because look, routinely on that map and other issues related to Afghanistan, we would wind up in places like the Washington Post and New York Times, not every day, not every week, but on a somewhat regular basis. And this stopped. And only when it became undeniable about what was happening, and CNN and Fox News and others were starting to print the map and other newspapers, then the New York Times decided to come back to me and start using the map. I don't know. Maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe they weren't interested in the information. I don't know. But I just find, you know, when reports like this come out, I start to ask questions.
The questions are good ones, Bill, because that map, it's easy enough to go back. Freedom of Information Act will make it available, Bill, eventually in time. Let us establish for people who are just catching up with the map. It was a visual representation of news reports. It wasn't you speculating. We were having news reports of the Taliban either going into a district center or raiding a district center or claiming a district center. And it grew and grew so that it was all was like pink ink being spilled closer and closer to Kabul. And each week you could point to, hey, what's happening here? Hey, that's what the map was. Do I remember correctly, Bill?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, we were using information from the Afghan government, from the press, from the Taliban itself, putting it all together. Even the U.S. military and the U.S. military was, and as Afghanistan was falling, John, to back to your follow up question. Yeah, they were. I hate to use this word, but it's true. They were lying and saying that it was far, far less than what it was. So they weren't actually refuting my map by name at that point. They were just saying, like when I said, look, the Taliban now control half the districts in the country. They're like, no, that's not true. It was only a quarter of the districts and the Afghan government's starting to take them back. That's what was happening. And yes, this map, it showed at the beginning, the very slow spread from the rural to the more built up areas. But then it just showed they showed the cascade from once the withdrawal was announced up until the end of the Afghan government.
Bill Rajo, Senior Fellow, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. Hussein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States. When we come back, the tragedy of the flooding in Pakistan and the questions about the U.S. government spending money in Afghanistan after withdrawal. What money? I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.